Hey, I've got the campaign brief ready, built from last quarter's data and the competitive landscape.
Approved. Oh, agents, where would we be without you?
Somewhere with a lot more tabs open.
Create your first Monday agent in minutes at monday.com.
The CAR File, the ultimate Panthers podcast with Nate Lundy.
And welcome to another edition of the NFL Files. My name is Nate Lundy. Thank you for being here. Week one in the National Football League is in the books. We now get a chance to look back at week one and also start to preview week two. We will do so by checking in on the team, figuring out the very latest injuries, expectations, the highs and lows of week one. Then we'll go around the NFL. We'll do that with the NFL Network's Brian Billick. And then in overtime this week, speaking of the NFL Network, one of the newest faces there on the NFL Network, Mike Garofolo, will join me for overtime, a six-pack of questions. It all gets started right now on the NFL Files.
The Big Interview.
Talking Panthers, and to do it from Outer Banks Sentinel, you find him on Twitter at MongoBX. That's his nickname, Mongo. It's Todd Bradley. Todd, let's start here. It seems like forever since the Panthers played, since they were the opening game on Thursday against the Broncos. But overall, before we dive into some of the specifics and some of the position groups, your overall takeaway from that week one loss to the Broncos?
Well, you know, we looked a lot at the Super Bowl rematch. Everybody was excited to see if there was going to be a Super Bowl hangover from either team. There wasn't. These were clearly two top echelon NFL teams going at it. We learned a lot from the game. There was a lot of things going in that I thought would be interesting, including the new secondary for the Panthers. Would Kelvin Benjamin have a good game? And then on the other side with the Broncos, you guys have a brand new quarterback out of Northwestern. Could he play ball? Turned out we got all those answers and more. It was a fantastic game, and that final drive was really something to watch.
Let's start off with the secondary. You brought it up, obviously, James Bradbury. You look across that secondary with the loss of Josh Norman. What's your takeaway in how they performed against the Broncos receivers?
Well, you know, you go all the way back to the draft with four of the five picks being defensive players and three of the four defensive players chosen all cornerbacks. I thought Worley might get the nod over Bradbury, but it was Bradbury had a heck of a game. He was back there, had a handful of tackles, and broke up some balls and played a heck of a ball game. So I was very impressed with the way that new look secondary played ball.
As the game went on, is there any part of the defensive performance that you look at and you say, okay, now that I've seen one game, here's what I'm going to be looking for in the home game against the 49ers coming up in week two?
Absolutely. We got to stop the run a whole lot better. C.J. Anderson tore it up. I think he had, 138 yards or something like that, and a couple of touchdowns. So they have to plug those holes in the running game, or it's going to be a long day with Carlos Hyde running the ball.
Overall, on the offensive side of things, obviously they tried to spread it around from a receiving standpoint. The return of Kelvin Benjamin, though, you touched on it briefly. What does he do in terms of what he brings back to this offense, being back after the injury from last year?
Well, I was really impressed with the way Kelvin Benjamin played. He got open when he needed to get open. And, you know, like you said, they've spread the ball around a lot between, you know, Benjamin and Olsen, 13 catches between the two of them. Philly Brown, Devin Funchess, and Teddy Ginn Jr. won a piece.
Well, and in terms of looking around at the targets, you brought it up. Do you think that that's the kind of balance we're going to see every week? Is it always going to be tilted towards Benjamin and Olsen, or is this an offense that can go to the hot hand? I mean, will we see those games where Ted Ginn Jr. winds up with 6-7 catches just because he's got the hot route and he's the guy that Cam is looking for?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we will. And that was also one of the things I was looking for in this week's game with the Panthers and Broncos, is Ginn was the guy last year. He really had one of the best seasons that he's ever had coming into the league. And we finally saw a little bit of what he could do. So You know, I was surprised he only had one catch. It was a very important catch on that last drive. But I think we're gonna see more balls thrown to the other guys going forward. Absolutely.
Any concern that Kelvin Benjamin was targeted 12 times but only caught six? Is that a concern offensively, or is that more of a reflection on the Broncos' secondary, you know, getting in there and knocking the ball around?
Yeah, I absolutely think that's a testament to how well the Broncos' secondary played. You know, when you look at the yardage that Cam had and the way he was able to spread that ball around, that was a great defense by the Broncos.
When it comes to running the ball, 15 carries for Jonathan Stewart, but we also saw Cam Newton run the ball more and certainly more effectively, maybe more so than really the way that we probably should have seen him in Super Bowl 50 as opposed to what was seen. Jonathan Stewart seems to be, at least to this point, defying age. Can he hold up for a 16-game season?
Well, and I think he is getting long in the tooth, and I think that's what you're going to see the rest of the season. I mean, Jonathan Stewart and Cam Newton combined over 100 yards with a touchdown, and I think that's probably what you're going to see going forward. I know a couple of the other running backs got a couple carries apiece, and they used those guys out of the backfield and just let Stewart run the ball, pass catching out of the backfield, and just let Stewart run the ball. But I think that's probably a good indication of what it's going to be like the rest of the season, with Stewart running the ball along with Cam Newton, with the backups getting a spell here and there, and you know, some third down action catching the ball out of the backfield.
The Panthers wind up with this game at home against the 49ers coming up for week two, then home against the Vikings. From your standpoint, and maybe even from what the fans are thinking, how important is it for them to get off both of those wins before they wind up doing three in a row against the division?
Yeah, and that, you just hit the nail on the head. They're really looking forward to this game. I think a lot of the fans are trying to put this game behind us. I mean, it was a rematch of the Super Bowl, one of the best teams in the league. They proved that on Thursday night. If there is such a thing as a good loss, which I don't know if there is,
right,
this was one of those. I mean, everybody kind of, aside from the helmet-to-helmet hits and the things that went down on that final drive, I think they're focusing on a couple of different things. They got to get Remmers able to stop the defensive rush on that right side of the line. He got blown by a handful of times in that game. They have to improve that if they want to win those next two games. They have to be able to stop the run. Carlos Hyde's shown at times he can be a beast, and they need to be able to stop him, because they were not able to stop Anderson on Thursday night. And then, you know, continued good play from Cam and the secondary, and I think you can put the pieces together. So in Carolina, a lot of people are looking past this win, saying, hey, we played well, missed that kick at the end of the game. Let's move forward, look forward to San Francisco, and if we can beat them and, you know, maybe get a hold of Sam Bradford in week three in Minnesota, we'll be back on track to where we want to be going into the heart of the schedule.
I love every week of the NFL season, Todd, and it pulls us into the overall soap opera every single week. But at the same time, I look down the schedule and I see the Monday Nighter coming up in week five against the Buccaneers after what Jameis Winston and Tampa did with Atlanta. Are Panthers fans kind of looking down the coast a little bit, wondering what's up with this Tampa team? They certainly were kind of some of the experts, I guess you could say, picked them to be the wild card, maybe to sneak in there, to jump up from their bad finish last year. Are the fans paying attention to what the Bucs are doing, or are they just focused on the Panthers?
You know, I think the old cliche holds true here. One game at a time. Let's not get ahead of ourselves, especially after that loss on Thursday night to the Broncos. Let's concentrate on San Francisco. You know, they might have that game circled down the line Monday night with Tampa Bay, because it did raise some eyebrows. You didn't know really what you were going to get with Tampa Bay this year, but four touchdown passes is an impressive first, start out of the box for the Buccaneers, and they played an excellent game. So one game at a time, let's take care of San Francisco first, and then that has potential to have a killer Monday night game against the Buccaneers for sure.
Great stuff on Twitter at MongoBX from Outer Banks Sentinel. It is Todd Bradley joining us to talk Panthers. Todd, really appreciate your time on the NFL Files. Have a great week.
You got it, man. Good to be here.
Coming up next, the coach, Brian Billick.
Around the league.
It is time for us to go around the NFL, and we do that each week with the coach, Brian Billick. You find him on Twitter, at Coach Billick. And as he is each week, he's brought to us by our friends at SeatGeek. Make sure you've got the SeatGeek app on your mobile device or that you're visiting SeatGeek.com. Make sure you, your family, your friends are always getting the best deal on tickets, and you do that with the SeatGeek app. Coach, let's start here with the Monday night game. A lot of people surprised not only for Jared Goff not to start, but not even active. I know I'm asking you to speculate, but why do you believe the number one overall pick is not out there for the Rams, given how inept their offense looked overall?
Well, you can only assume that Jeff Fisher doesn't think he's ready. I mean, let's go back to Jeff's history. Yeah, when they drafted Steve McNair back in the 90s, he didn't actually start until his third season. They carried him along, felt like they needed to nurture him. They had two losing seasons leading up to that, and then he finally found his way into the starting lineup. If Jared Goff is not better than Case Keenum, they got a real problem, because obviously they were betting on playing great defense, running the ball, which they didn't last night. Todd Gurley only had 47 yards in 17 carries. And Case Keenum, you know, maybe you can play that formula where he was only 17 to 35, but he had two interceptions. If you're going to play that play great defense, run the ball formula, you got to run the ball and can't turn it over. So if they're not going to play a lot better than that, you got to put Jared Goff in just to get the experience.
Coach, is the Niners defense improved, or was this just a matter of the Rams being that bad?
Well, we're going to find out. We don't know, because the Rams offense was basically so inept. And so, yeah, we're going to have to see how it pans out. It's likely they're a little bit better than we all thought they were going to be, but their roster, when you look at it, you have some question marks, notwithstanding even the offensive side. Obviously, what Chip Kelly's doing, they have a lot of confidence. They obviously look pretty good. But we're going to find out, particularly this week, when they're going to play the Seattle Seahawks. We're going to find out more about L.A. and the fact that they play the Seattle Seahawks. In terms of San Francisco 49ers, the next step for them, obviously, is to, can they – indeed go on the road, and it's a tall task because they're going across the country to the Carolina Panthers. Now you're going to see a legitimate run offense. You're going to see maybe the best quarterback or the best athlete in the game in Cam Newton, and a very, very good Carolina defense. So it's going to be a test for the 49ers. They go across the country and put that kind of performance together against Carolina, then we're all going to say, nope, we were all kind of wrong. This team's pretty good.
For some people, looking at the AFC, the Steelers were a bit of a sleeper pick for some experts, Coach. Did you see that out of them in their Monday night contest against Washington? Could they contend in the AFC?
Well, I've on record, I had Pittsburgh down as my Super Bowl team. I think they could be, if, and this is a huge if they can stay healthy. And that's the key. And we're talking about Ben Roethlisberger, obviously Antonio Brown. That offensive line, which is healthy and looks spectacular. You know, yeah, Le'Veon Bell's not there, but D'Angelo Williams, let's remember last year he cranked off 127 yards in the opener as well. So D'Angelo Williams is a good, physical, you know, Pittsburgh Steeler type of runner that they got to love doing, you know, seeing what he's doing for them. And defensively, I think they're improved. They're healthy, although you see Ryan Shazier may be hurt. I go back to the injury situation. Of course, that's true of any team. But they were obviously spectacular. Washington's suspect on defense. But I still feel like Pittsburgh is the team to beat in the AFC. They, too. Okay, now you got to follow up with it, because you've got a Cincinnati team coming into town that looked pretty good, and it's open.
When we look at the AFC, Coach, and you know this as well as anyone, you can't bet against Bill Belichick. There were those that said if the Patriots could go through their first four games without Tom Brady and be 2-2, that everybody would be happy. But based on how they performed against Arizona, is it out of the realm of possibilities that they might be 3-1 or even 4-0 by the time Brady comes back?
Yeah, and I was one of them on our show game day first for the NFL Network. We were talking about it, and I believe all of us picked Arizona to win, and to a man, we said, but we're nervous about it, because anytime you pick against the Patriots and Belichick, and particularly a Brady-less Belichick, you have a little bit of confidence. They come back and bite you every time. So, no, this bodes well for them. You know, for them, they don't look at it that way, and he's the master at one game at a time. They got Miami coming to town, so it's a divisional game, which is important for them. But I'd be surprised if anybody picks the Patriots to lose to Miami at home.
Speaking of Miami, they went on the road in really just a defensive slugfest there against Seattle. What did you see out of the Dolphins? And also, Coach, what did you see out of Seattle?
Well, and that I was impressed with that. I mean, that's a tough place to go. We talked last week about the value I put on the ability to go on the road and win, particularly in an opener, and particularly when you're talking about Miami going to Seattle. They'd been better off going to London. It would be an easier trip for them. That's a tough slot. The defense was impressive. I think it was an example of Russell Wilson this year. I think is going to have to be finally a 500-plus throw quarterback. He's been under that his first few years because they haven't had to do more than that. Play great defense, run the ball. Not that they're not going to continue to play great defense. They ran the ball okay, but Russell Wilson threw the ball 43 times. And I think we're going to see more of that this year because they're going to need for him to throw the ball in order to get the win.
We know it was against the Cleveland Browns, but at the same time, Carson Wentz came out, a guy that just a few weeks ago, Coach, wasn't even expected to start because Sam Bradford was there, and he wound up with 278 yards, a couple of touchdowns. What did you think of the rookie's performance?
Yeah, very impressive. I mean, particularly for a rookie, you just want to see, are they overwhelmed? Do they look like they can function? And both he and Dak Prescott played very, very well. It was interesting to watch them. It was the same game plan. Both opened up with a lot of boots and outside the pocket, you know, to settle them down, make it an easy read, and then eventually evolved where they had to throw more from the pocket. Now, and it's good for their development. I don't know that you want a rookie throwing the ball 37 times a game like Wentz did or 45 times like Dak Prescott. But from a development standpoint, because that puts them on a 600-throw season, which would be great for their development as a quarterback, but in terms of winning games and that profile, that would be a steep curve for these rookies. But I tell you what, they looked like they were up to it. Where you saw it was down on third down. Both struggled a little bit in third down in those critical areas. Although Carson Wentz in the red zone looked pretty good. So, yeah, you had to be pleased, even though, of course, Dallas lost. You had to be pleased, both teams, with the starts of their rookies, Dak Prescott and Carson Wentz.
Kansas City Chiefs pull off the biggest comeback for them in 56 years with their franchise. Is this a legit AFC West contender? I would assume so, based on what we've seen out of Andy Reid and Alex Smith managing the game.
Oh, absolutely. And it was who didn't play for them that's significant, that they all but at home could come back that way. That'll give them a lot of confidence. Now, obviously, Denver looks to be very solid. Huge win by the Oakland Raiders in New Orleans. They're going to be a factor as well. So it's going to be interesting to see. I think this is going to be a very tight division, but certainly that bodes well for Kansas City, if nothing else, give them the confidence to know, yeah, even without Jamal Charles and some of the other players we didn't have there, we're a pretty good football team.
You just brought up the Raiders, and it's been an interesting conversation in looking at Oakland, because there were those that have criticized their opening game, saying, well, wait, this was supposed to be a team that was extremely strong on defense, and here they gave up 34 points. But the counter to that, Coach, is, well, just about everybody gives up at least 30 points facing Drew Brees.
Yeah, if you're going to dismiss anybody, everybody that gives up a lot of points, a lot of yards, Drew Brees, the New Orleans Saints, at home in that dome, you can, you know, check off pretty much the entire league. You know, this guy's pretty good. I was very impressed with Oakland's ability to go on the road in one of the toughest places to play of all football, particularly in the opener, and to do it in the way they did, to come back the way they did, to go for it on two-point conversion twice and to get it. That bodes very well for that team, a resiliency on that team. And, yeah, certainly some things, the big plays they're going to have to cut down on. I know that was disappointing for Ken Norton Jr. And his defense, but they're not the Lone Ranger in that regard when it comes to New Orleans Saints. New Orleans Saints defense continues they're going to have a tough time this year because Drew Brees and Sean Payton know once again they got to score a minimum of 30 points a game or they got no chance.
Takes a lot of guts to do what Coach Jack Del Rio did at the end of the game. Coach, do you think you could have done the same thing if you were coaching?
Well, I've told in a lot of interviews that I'm doing talk about, you typically, particularly going on the road, you'll get with the staff and say, okay, guys, what's our mentality going to be at the end of the game? We've got to go for two. I mean, you put that down specifically at what do you guys think? It's different at home than it is possibly on the road. And go through the mindset of Jack Del Rio. Okay, I'm going to take a 50-50 chance of getting a two-point play, or what are my odds if I go into overtime in New Orleans on the road that late in the game against that crowd, and, oh, by the way, against a Hall of Famer like Drew Brees? I kind of like my odds with the two-point play rather than putting it in Drew Brees' hands.
He's the coach, Brian Billick. We say it every week. If you spend 10, 15 minutes with the coach, you're a smarter football fan. He's brought to us every week here on the NFL Files podcast by SeatGeek. Make sure you've downloaded the SeatGeek app or visited SeatGeek.com. It's a great way for you to make sure if you're getting tickets to a sporting event or a concert that you're getting the absolute best deal for you and your friends. That's the SeatGeek app. Coach, appreciate the time as always, and we'll talk to you next week.
Absolutely.
Overtime.
For Overtime on the NFL Files, Mike Garofolo from NFL Network. First of all, Mike, congratulations on making the jump to NFL Network. We've got a six-pack of questions for you, rapid-fire style. Let's start here. After seeing what happened with Jack Del Rio, are we going to see more coaches go for two?
I don't think so. I think a lot of them are still conservative by nature, and Jack Del Rio is a more forward-thinking coach and has been for a while, so it doesn't shock me that he's the guy, and you know, there is an old adage, you play for the win on the road, you play for the tie at home, so maybe the situation, you know, bared out for that one, and the momentum that they had at the time. I just don't see that being something that all of a sudden coaches are going to start doing, because the minute they fail, they're going to be called upon as bozos.
All right, question number two in the six-pack. For you, the biggest surprise of week one?
Probably the Detroit Lions. You know, I went up there and I heard all that positive talk about their offense and how they wouldn't miss Calvin Johnson. And everything I heard was that this offense actually, not that they'd be better off without Calvin Johnson, but for this offense, the way that they want to spread the ball around, nothing really runs through one person. So that they'd be able to kind of move that ball around. And you hear that and you go, yeah, but you're going to be without Calvin Johnson. So how is that possible? Well, you saw on display. Now, that's not the best defense they're going to face all year. Maybe one of the worst, as a matter of fact. So they're going to have to continue to prove that. But to me, that was a surprise they were able to pull that one off.
All right, Mike, question number three. Does Larry Fitzgerald actually have a secret fountain of youth? And if so, how do you and I get some of it?
He is amazing. And it's all about how he takes care of his body and his dedication to the game. And it is up there with some of the greats of all time. And I don't know if this is going to be his last season. I think a lot of it's going to depend on what kind of success the Cardinals have and whether he thinks this team could you know, have more success a year from now. I don't think that decision's been made yet. I think it's a possibility, but at the very least, I think he could absolutely continue to play at a high level for beyond this season.
It's Overtime on the NFL Files. Mike Garofolo from NFL Network with me. Follow him on Twitter, at Mike Garofolo. Mike, question number four, true or false, the Patriots will go 4-0 with Jimmy Garoppolo?
I'll go true. Yeah, just because they've got three more home games here, and then they catch Houston on a short week on the Thursday night game at home. So, I think it's a possibility, and sure, I'll ride with my somewhat similar namesake, Jimmy.
There you go. All right, question number five for you. Based on what you saw in week one, who wins the NFC East?
I'm still going Redskins. Just because I didn't expect anybody to run away with it, I still don't. I think that's a terrific team that they played. I'm not going to overreact to that one. I do think that there are holes on that roster. I think there's things that they need to patch up, but I'm not going to overreact to that one. There's going to be the opposite of overreaction Monday. Even though it's beyond Monday, but it's going to be the opposite of that, because I still believe that they're going to be the team that winds up coming out on top.
Mike Garofolo with me. Last question for you in our six-pack. If you had the choice, and obviously the athletic ability as well, Mike, if you had the choice, would you rather catch a touchdown from your favorite quarterback or sack your most hated rival quarterback?
Probably the TD. Just because, you know, those guys, the skill position guys get all the glory, and then you get to do, well, I guess you can do a dance after the sack, but the end zone dances to me are always, there's more options down there amongst the fans and the goalposts and all that stuff. I'd even draw a penalty for using something as a prop.
All right, bonus answer to this one, Mike. Who would that quarterback be for you? Who's your favorite? Who would you want to be on the receiving end of?
My favorite of all time, I grew up watching Randall Cunningham, so that would have to be my guy.
There you go. Mike Garofolo with us on Overtime on the NFL Files. Make sure you watch him now that he's on NFL Network. Again, congratulations, and follow him on Twitter at Mike Garofolo. Mike, appreciate the time. Thanks for joining me.
You got it, Nate.
Mike Garofolo, NFL Network, appreciate his time. As I mentioned, just made the jump from Fox to NFL Network, and prior to that, he had been with USA Today. So definitely moving up the ladder when it comes to covering football. Appreciate your time joining me this week on this edition of the NFL Files. My name is Nate Lundy. Talk to you next week right here.
This has been a Sports Joe production. For more team-specific podcasts, visit sportsjoe.com.